dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. Who better to take stock with about such matters than the president of the Center for Security Policy, Fred Flights, a career intelligence professional who graces this program as well as supports it every week. He is, among other things, an alumnus of the Trump National Security Council, where he served as its chief of staff under Ambassador John Bolton. Also has spent time in the intelligence community itself, in the CIA, in the State Department, in the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and of course has been serving with us for some time monitoring what's going on inside the intelligence community. And Fred, I wanted to salute you and its author for a terrific piece that you tweeted out the other day by our friend Christopher Ruddy, the founder and driving force behind Newsmax. It talks about the present moment as essentially Trump's finest hour, and I want to get your sense of it as well, based on your firsthand experience with him in an earlier stage before this crisis set in, and how you think he's doing now.
Well, Ruddy's an interesting observer here, because he's a conservative pundit. He's a friend of the president, but he's also been very objective, and he hasn't been afraid to say things that offends the president. And his point in this article is that this is really a time for the president to demonstrate exceptional leadership to save our country in the midst of a very serious crisis. And Ruddy explains that the president has been doing this, that he's been going against conventional wisdom and doing things such as cutting off flights from China, cutting off flights from Europe. I think, Frank, we can just assume that if Joe Biden was president, he would have went to the UN. He would have asked European or Chinese leaders if they want to do this. But the president's approach is America first. It's not isolationism, but it puts the interests of the American people first. Then we deal with other countries, our friends and allies. We're trying to help other countries. But the president was not going to negotiate with the Chinese over cutting off flights from China. He saw this as a dire threat. He took action. He took a lot of criticism from it, including Joe Biden, who called this xenophobic and hysterical. And the president is right. Taking this step probably saved thousands of American lives, probably more. And it is, I also might add, the pressure the president's putting on the drug companies to quickly approve antiviral medicines, even medicines that we're not sure will work. And I think the president's pressure and publicizing the anti-malarial drug that he talks about constantly, and he'd been ridiculed by in the press, looks like the president was right. And he pressed doctors worldwide to try this group of drugs together. And his leadership, I think, is showing through.
It is. And I think something that obviously you had firsthand experience of during your time at the National Security Council, as well as, you know, observing the president close hand, both before and after, is his decisiveness. And one can argue about his decisions, and some have, as you mentioned, Fred Flights, but they have been characterizing his presidency throughout and have, in so many ways, I think, really made this country once again the greatest hope of mankind. And we certainly need it to be that in the midst of this pandemic. And I wanted to ask you, Fred, speaking of the pandemic, to talk a little bit about the piece that you had this week in FoxNews.com outlet about getting to the bottom of what happened here and specifically how we should go about doing that.
It's crucial after this crisis passes that there be an investigation of how government at every level, state, local, federal, dealt with this crisis, dealt with the epidemic, and how the world dealt with it, particularly China and the World Health Organization. But I've made very clear, and I have another op-ed coming out soon, I'm not sure which outlet's going to publish it, that there should be robust congressional investigations, but we do not want a 9/11 commission. And the reason I say that, Frank, is that there's simply no chance to have an objective blue ribbon commission investigate this, especially when we see Adam Schiff pushing for one right now. In this environment, that's not possible. In a perfect world, it sounds like a great idea. But under the Constitution, Congress does oversight. It should not be contracting out its oversight responsibility to an unelected and unaccountable blue ribbon panel. Let's let Congress do it. We know there'll be politics in the mix. The American people understand that. No more 9/11 commissions.
And that's because you saw two things happen, I think, with that very prominent commission following the catastrophe of jihadist attacks against this country on 9/11. Was it not, Fred? One, how long it took for them to come up with their responses, their analysis, their findings, their recommendations. 3 years, as I recall. And secondly, some of the specific recommendations that were really ill-advised and are dogging us to this day. Talk about those two concerns.
Well, I know the 9/11 Commission is sacrosanct to many people, but I've studied it very closely, and I'm frankly not a fan. It went way beyond its mandate, and it proposed things that would never have been approved in normal circumstances, especially creating the Director of National Intelligence position, a bad idea that had been knocked around for decades. This was set up. It's become a wasteful and politicized layer of bureaucracy. And it only happened because the 9/11 Commission put it in its report. It had nothing to do with the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on September 11, 2001. This was a commission that aggressively pushed its recommendations with its own PR operation. It published its report independently, and then it never went away. And that's what happens, I think, when we have people, they mean well, but they're trying to take advantage of a crisis. Let's let Congress do this. We don't need another unelected panel. We know that Nancy Pelosi has a long laundry list of things she wants to insert in a virus relief bill, including implementing aspects of the Green Deal. If there's a 9/11 Life Commission, those things are going to be imposed on the American people by such a commission.
And this is really, again, a question of accountability and the constitutional processes. Now, if there isn't a congressionally mandated commission, Fred Flights, obviously the vehicle for doing this sort of investigation, this review, especially, I would hope, what the Chinese were doing, their role in, first of all, the initiation of this pandemic and the gravity of it by failing to come clean about the problem. This Dr. Deborah Birx, who is now heading up the White House response, has made it perfectly clear that that bad dope that they were providing about what was going on was a very important contributor to why we were not quicker to the party here. But the problem, of course, is that the House oversight committees would be doing the investigation in the absence of a commission. That's the constitutional order of things, but are you concerned that that might result in, well, more of the same kind of misbehavior that we've seen them engage in with respect to the impeachment of the president in recent months?
Well, a Democrat-engineered 9/11-like commission is going to just attack the president and ignore China's criminal negligence and also the criminal negligence of the World Health Organization. They're going to attempt that in the House, but the Republicans will be able to argue in front of the cameras the truth. And I welcome that debate. Let Adam Schiff run a rigged commission of the House, and I want to see Devin Nunes and other heroes in Congress get the truth to the American people in open hearings.
Right, and presumably the Senate Republicans would have the gavel on the other side of the Hill and able to do the same thing even better. Fred Flights, we are hard out of time. I appreciate yours so much. Thanks for joining us each week. Come back to us again next. In the meantime, stay well, my friend, and thanks for your service to our country. Next up, we will speak with Curtis Ellis more about Trump's finest hour and what it might mean for all of us right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. It's a pleasure to say, joined by a man I admire greatly for his thoughtful approach to international economics and trade policies, and a guy who got it right on America First before Donald Trump began talking about it and campaigning on it. In fact, he became a senior policy advisor to the Donald Trump 2016 campaign. He is these days the policy director for a group called America First Policies. His name is Curtis Ellis, and it's always a delight to catch up with him, especially when we've got as much to talk about in his portfolio as we do today. Curtis, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you. I wanted to pick up on something I was just talking about with Fred Flights. You've had an opportunity to see closely, work with intimately, and understand perhaps as well as anybody the man who is now the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Christopher Ruddy wrote a piece the other day. We'll be talking with Bobby Charles shortly about a similar piece that he's written, describing, in Ruddy's case, this is Trump's finest hour. I wanted to take stock with you. Do you agree?
Yes, certainly. This is America's greatest test in a generation. And in many ways, this is like our darkest hour that Britain went through in the Battle of London, the Battle of Britain. We're seeing the president mobilize American public spirit, the American public, and the American private sector to meet this challenge. When you see crises like this, it brings out the best in us. And or in other cases, in some people, it brings out the worst. You see, you know, as they say, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And no one's tougher than President Donald J. Trump. And you see an evenness of leadership, a command of the details, and a command of the podium that he's now appearing before America on a daily basis. And this will define his presidency. I'm sad to say, I think the opponents believe they can take him down with this. We already see calls for investigations and et cetera, et cetera. The same reflex action that created the Mueller probe, the Russia hoax, the impeachment travesty, they're still reacting in the same way. And they're trying to blame President Trump for this virus, but the American public knows China is to blame for the virus. This came out of China. It was created by the Chinese Communist Party through their neglect, their corruption, their cover-up. They hid the crucial information that would allow the world to prepare, and now they're trying to take advantage of it.
I just wanted to say, Deborah Birx put a fine point on it the other day in one of those press conferences with the president, in which she basically said, look, we were very badly served by the Chinese withholding the necessary information about the true nature of this disease and its potential for a pandemic. And it occurs to me, you and I both lived through the Bush years, of course, to sort of paraphrase the Democratic talking points of that time, China lied. People died. And I think this point needs to be brought home to the American people. If there's an investigation to be done, hopefully by the Congress, as Fred Flights argued, it ought to be on that point. But let me ask you about just a case in point of what the president has been summoning us to and getting done. I'd heard on National Public Radio, of all places, not exactly a booster team for the president of the United States, a very interesting report this morning about how companies across the country are rallying to the call to help manufacture in this country once again ventilators. I think you heard this piece too. Were you heartened by it as I was, Curtis?
I was very heartened by it. I've been writing about the ventilators. I've been hearing from small companies, suppliers to the large automotive giants, and they were waiting. They've been waiting for the call to make the parts for ventilators. And some have complained that they weren't getting the calls. Others have said, well, we got an email, but we weren't given the specs, so we don't know what to make. Please show us the blueprints. We'll make it now. And this piece on NPR was terrific. I'm really glad that some of our financial reporters, the business reporters, are learning that there's more to business than spreadsheets and finance.
And politicized reporting against this presidency, which is the other thing that most of them seem to be focused on most of the time, has come to your attention, Curtis Ellis. And again, we're speaking with the policy director of America First Policies. Curtis, let me ask you, you touched on a moment ago what the communist Chinese are up to, and lying and deceiving and manipulating and propagandizing and the like are obviously all part of their techniques in this moment. But you've written in a very important piece, I think, at American Greatness a couple of weeks ago now, about China's post-virus plan to destroy America's economy. I would argue it's a plan to destroy America, period, but certainly it's clear that the American economy is in the crosshairs. This is the challenge that Donald Trump is in part responding to, but tell us about what they have in mind and how they are pursuing it.
Yes, they're thinking a few moves ahead on this one. This is the piece I wrote, draws from Horizon Strategy's examination of Chinese documents, Chinese language documents. They have written it. They've told us what they want to do. In the chaos that has been unleashed on the world, the economic chaos, the economic shutdown as a result of this pandemic, the Chinese want to take advantage of that to further their penetration of the manufacturing supply chains. They want to become the supplier to the world. They want to cement that position. And by flooding the West with goods, and you're seeing it already with the medical gear, the personal protective equipment, they're shipping this out to Europe and to the United States. We're seeing masks coming here on the New England Patriots private plane, private jet. And they're using this to position themselves as the world leader. And at a time of global crisis, China comes to the rescue. This is propaganda operation.
I'm fond of saying that they would have us believe that communism is a cure for coronavirus.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because they believe that their system is superior, and they want the world to believe that. Unfortunately, we've seen some of the useful idiots in the American press, the New York Times, the Washington Post, echoing that line that, you know, they have an advantage over us through authoritarianism. People like Ray Dalio say that as well. The Wall Street financier, that this command economy, this totalitarian dictatorship is superior to the Western model of feckless democracy and argumentation. So they're using this. They have a deliberate plan to create chaos in the world and then exploit that chaos to present themselves as the stable power. They are an island of stability in a world of instability. That's their basic plan. That's their message. And they want to do it on an economic as well as political and geostrategic level. As American and Western industries shut down, their factories are running.
Right. What you have done such important work on over the years is both talking about and warning against the kind of hollowing out of our industries, the predatory practices that the Chinese have engaged in, the various trade agreements that we have fashioned either bilaterally or multilaterally that facilitated that, the World Trade Organization notably among them. But you've also been very clear-eyed about the need for us to restore supply chains here. And long before everybody became aware, as they have now, thanks in part to Rosemary Gibson and your good work and the Committee on the Present Danger, China's work as well, I think, of the fact that we have become critically dependent on China for medicines, for heaven's sakes, among other things. You were on this case, and I want to salute you for that, and also suggest that this is the moment, as you've just made clear, when the Chinese are doubling down, we must as well. Do you think that President Trump is going now to have the support for the America First strategy that he has talked about with your counsel and advice, I know, over the years, but it's more or less been on deaf ears until now? What do you think is the way ahead?
I think he's definitely going to have the support. You see some excellent voices in the U.S. Senate. We have Tom Cotton, Josh Hawley, Marco Rubio, Marsha Blackburn. These people are fiercely advocating bringing these supply chains back to America, not just with medicines, starting with pharmaceuticals, but we can't stop there. And the story that you showed on the ventilators did at NPR shows the need for deep productive capacity to exist here. We need to make parts. We need to do die casting. We need to do forging. We need to do metallurgy. We need to have that capability and know-how here. Because they could never make those parts if they had to ship them halfway around the world. It's one thing shipping it from Detroit to Minneapolis. It's another thing shipping it from Shanghai to Minneapolis. And now this virus has made clear what people like myself and Rosemary Gibson and you and others have been talking about for years. This little microbe has done more to make it clear. And the American people get it. The American people have always gotten it. And I've seen some polling that they blame China for this virus, and China has now become a totem for all of the other issues that they've also understood. They took our jobs. They've hollowed out our industries. They've weakened us, literally, physically as well as economically, and they pose a danger to our livelihood and our way of life. The people understand that. It's the Wall Street elites and others who didn't get it, and now there is a full-throated support. People like Gary Cohn, they're not going to have the president's ear anymore.
Praise God. I do want to say that one of the polls that has demonstrated a clarity on this point among the American people is the one that I've shared with you, Curtis Ellis, from the Committee on the Present Danger, China, John McLaughlin, the president's own pollster, in fact, finding back in January, before the pandemic's effects were really being felt and were preoccupying all of us, that the American people wanted a course correction of the kind I think that President Trump has been urging even before the present crisis. And we hope this finest hour will indeed translate into that course correction and a mandate for doing it from the American people. Thank you for your efforts in that regard, Curtis, as well as your visits with us from time to time. I hope you'll join us again soon, because I want to talk more about those Wall Street guys with you in the near future. In the meantime, stay well, my friend, and keep up the great work that you do at America First Policies. Next up, we will be speaking with Robert Charles. We'll talk about this time in a moment's history and what we best be doing about it right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We have, from time to time, the privilege of visiting with one of the most, I think, impressive contributors to the public policy debate on a whole host of topics. You frequently see him at Fox News. You perhaps read his writings at the Association for Mature American Citizens at amac.us. You've heard him a lot on this program, for which I'm very grateful. His name is Robert Charles. He is a former Assistant Secretary of State in the George W. Bush administration. He has had a distinguished career of public service before that, however, including stints in uniform of the United States Navy as a naval intelligence officer, as well as service in the Reagan and George H.W. Bush White Houses. He is a lawyer by training. He has taught at Harvard as well as studied there. He is an extraordinary resource, and we're always privileged to have a chance to visit with him, especially today. Welcome back, Robert Charles. Thanks for joining us. Let me ask you about something you wrote about earlier. We've talked about it with Curtis Ellis previously and Fred Flights. Your thoughts on this as America's finest hour. We're facing, obviously, a great challenge. It's easy to be despondent about it, especially if you're tired of being hunkered down. You're perhaps unemployed at the moment. What is it about this moment and how we're dealing with it that gives you hope?
I'll be honest, Frank, the finest moment quote, as you know, comes from Winston Churchill at really what was the toughest moment for that country in the Battle of Britain, the summer of 1940. And I went back and I happen to be reading a trilogy right now in the area, and it leapt out to me like a light in the darkness. And it really is the fact that two things are happening at once, and people should take great heart from them. They should be, I don't think you're Pollyannish to be optimistic if you just understand the underlying facts around both this economic and health crisis of sorts. The first of these two things that's happening is that Americans themselves are all in effect on one wavelength right now. Not everybody, but just about everybody. They're understanding that we are one country, that you do literally have to do things together in order to succeed. That is the lesson that not only Churchill for his countrymen, but America under Eisenhower and George C. Marshall, and frankly, people like George Patton, had to learn up close and personal. When life and death were on the line, whether it was at the platoon and unit level or all the way up to an army level, they really kind of learned and then passed forward to the average American the fact that you either hang together or you hang separately. And if you hang together, you're going to make it. A second piece that's happening here that's really extraordinary is we have a leader who, you know, and just like Ronald Reagan came to us at the moment when we needed to take down the Soviet Union, it became nearly existential. We have a president right now in Donald Trump that is, as a seasoned businessman who has gone like Harry Truman, went through bankruptcy, came out the other side, has been through the fires, understands upright, left, right, up and down, understands how to manage large crisis teams. He's doing that. And I've written pieces about this too. You can get them at amac.us or on Fox. But the bottom line is, this is a president who is absolutely right for this hour. And so it's the finest hour for America because we are pulling together as people and we have a leader who is helping to guide us. You don't have to be a great elocutionist. You don't have to be, superbly versed in 4 and 5 and 6 syllable words in order to be a good leader. And Patton was a good leader. This is a really good leader and we're benefiting from that.
Well, I believe that to be true, and I appreciate so much your clarity in saying it as you have. We need to take heart, and we need to not lose faith in our country, and certainly in our governing republic. It's vital that we persist and, in fact, thrive at the end of it all. I want to talk to you about the reason we're in such trouble at the moment, and that is Communist China and the political party that runs it, the Chinese Communist Party. You are a member of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. You have thought hard and long about a lot of this, notably during your time as a naval intelligence officer. And I'd like to ask you to think about and speak on the proposition that whether or not this pandemic was unleashed deliberately by China with a manufactured coronavirus variant. We don't know the answer to that, and we may never know the answer to that. But whether we are watching the Chinese taking away from this whole experience, and perhaps others too, for that matter, a proof of concept of the utility and the danger, really, of a biological warfare attack against the United States.
Look, the longer you live, the more things you see that you never thought you'd see, and therefore the less surprised you tend to be by the next surprise. This is a situation in which I don't think many Americans, there were some in the intelligence community, but most Americans never imagined they'd see this day. And what are we witnessing? Well, what we're witnessing is a cascading effect that, you know, however you date or dot the origin, you have the cascading effect of a communist country. And again, I say the longer you live, because I spent time behind the Iron Curtain in Soviet Russia in the early 80s. I was there. I was in Soviet Poland and East Germany and a bunch of other places, Czechoslovakia at the time, which doesn't exist anymore. But you see happening in China now the kind of assembling deception, intentional misleading denial and deception that you have always seen tied to profoundly powerful and ruthless communist countries. What you're seeing in China today is, I would say, if you count them, probably 10 or 12 major lies. And those lies have unfolded one after another. They should be, frankly, shamefaced on the world stage. And I think in many ways they are. But, you know, very powerful. You know, you can go back to the earliest days of the Soviet Union. You can go to the days of Stalin. You can go to the later days of Khrushchev and Brezhnev and Andropov and even Gorbachev early on. Where deception begins and roots the ideology of the government itself is corrupt. You will see sequential, really unending corruption. And so here's what we know. We know that this virus, which is a novel type of coronavirus, there are other coronaviruses out there, but it is novel chiefly because it seems to strike with a certain level of randomness. Its transmission is easy. It may, in fact, live, according to CDC, in 40% of those carrying it without people even knowing they're carrying it. All of this originated out of Wuhan. Wuhan, China, does happen. I mean, it's an objective fact, does happen to have a medical research facility. Everything is government controlled in China. So, you know, is it possible that this was released into that 1,000-person market at that time? Possibly. I would argue that coronaviruses have jumped from the animal species to the human species in the past. And it's also just as likely or more so that it didn't. But here's the deal. China is seeing how the free world, how the United States, Europe, and the rest of the world reacts or can be caught flat-footed by a pandemic. Now, the only piece of silver lining on that is that, having once shot a mortar at me, I'm going to look for a defense against the next mortar, if that's what happened. And even if the mortar just escaped accidentally from the tube and ended up in my backyard, I'm going to now prepare for that. So I think the good news out of this is that more Americans, but also, frankly, everybody globally, all the people who are being taken in by Huawei, all those people who are being taken in by the Belt and Road, all those people who are being taken in by the idea that China was your best friend, your big brother, you know, anybody that needed anything would get it for free from them. No way. What's happening here is that there is a clarity of mind. people are realizing communist China is not to be trusted. And I think that will ultimately help us to protect ourselves more in the future.
From your lips to God's ears, Bobby Charles, I couldn't agree more that that's how it should be. It certainly seems there's evidence of it. We've done a poll, as you know, at the Committee on the Present Danger of China, even before this pandemic, that suggested that was beginning to take hold in the United States. And I very much hope that'll be the case elsewhere. Let me ask you finally, one of the countervailing forces in much of this corrective has been the globalist sentiment that has brought us to this pass, to some extent, I would argue. Namely, this idea that we just need to engage with China. We just need to do business with them. We just need to transfer our productive capacity to them and rely on them for supplies of everything from flat screens and rare earth minerals to medicine, for heaven's sakes. Bobby Charles, again, you've given a lot of thought to this. One of the means by which this has been engineered has been Wall Street. You've studied economics. You know much more about this than I, I'm sure. But I'm very concerned, I must say, by the concentration of power in Wall Street in general, in terms of the immense capital market wealth of this nation, in the hands of a relatively small number of people, but most especially in the hands of a single guy by the name of Larry Fink, who is the founder and chairman of, well, I call it the 800-ton gorilla in Wall Street, BlackRock, who's very keen on sort of the globalist agenda, the environment, social justice, governance programs of the hard left, and imposing that on Wall Street and thereby on the rest of the business community on the one hand, and on the other, giving immense amounts of money, $3 trillion by some estimates so far, to China, enabling a lot of the dangers that you've just been talking about. Could you just very quickly give us a sense of what's wrong with that picture and the idea that we might be giving this guy even more power in the public sector as well here now?
So, excellent point. And concentration of power, as Ronald Reagan was quick to say, is always to be suspected and frankly, to be opposed. You know, I think there's an interesting nexus between the group AMAC, which represents 2.1 million conservative Americans, and frankly, 63 million Americans voted for President Trump. There is an interesting nexus between the way they look at the world. They're all traditionalists. They tend to be rugged individual types. They believe that the American dream is something you make for yourself. You don't ask it of others. They believe in all constitutional rights. And they also believe, I think, as a general matter, that concentration of power is dangerous, that if you have too much capital or too much aggregated power and the power to coerce, whether it's to induce or to coerce, that kind of cuts against the grain of traditional America, as in individuals are not only are their liberties highly valued and their freedom to make choices, but that our best choices as a nation are made when we have individuals. So bottom line here is concentration of power in the form of whether it's on Wall Street or in the form of communist China. Both in either case, it's like two ends of a spectrum that come back around and meet at the top. They open the opportunity for domination over the individual will, over traditional American values. And I think that's why we should be suspect of it.
Bobby Charles, we have to leave it at that. Thank you for your time today, as well as the great work you do at the Association for Mature American Citizens. Give us the website again, please.
That's AMAC.us, or they can just Google AMAC. And the outcome is you get all these benefits, as you know, they're the conservative alternative to a lot of liberals like AARP. But you also get the benefits of having voice in America.
Thank you so much, Bobby Charles. We'll talk with you again soon. Next up, we'll speak with David Goldman about some of these issues and other things that we should be worried about going on in China at the moment and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back for one of the high points of our week here at Secure Freedom Radio, and that is the opportunity to visit with the great David Goldman. He is best known, perhaps, for his marvelous columns at Asia Times, often under the nom de plume of Spengler. He is the author also of How Nations Die and a maven of the financial markets. So we find many things to talk with him about each week. And this is perhaps as urgent a moment to do so as any. And David, I want to first welcome you, of course, but second to compliment you for a remarkable piece that you wrote at Asia Times in the past few days about, well, what COVID-19 looks like in New York City at the moment where you find yourself. Welcome and tell us about it.
Thank you for inviting me and thanks for the kind words. There are signs of social decay which are quite alarming. For example, I spoke to a Pakistani lady who's the manager in the produce section of the last grocery store which will deliver fresh produce in my neighborhood. She said she's quitting because she can't make the commute from Queens anymore because now that the ridership on the subway is down by 90%, it's been entirely taken over by the homeless, and she feels physically dangerous to be there. The homeless problem is extraordinary. Even on the Q train, which goes up to the Upper East Side where I live and is a relatively, I guess, high-end part of the subway, half the car in the morning will be abandoned because there's a homeless person, you know, highly fragrant, sleeping there. A few weeks ago, they found a homeless person dead covered with bed bugs on the subway. So the danger is that if you can't transport people, even for essential services, some of them will start to shut down. The hospitals, as President Trump was saying, look like a war zone. The very high rate of infection of medical personnel, emergency personnel are getting COVID-19. We're only now getting the tests. You now can get a test. A week ago, you couldn't. And if you went to a hospital to wait for one, you were more likely to get infected than to be tested. The one good piece of news that we've got is that the criminals here are very health conscious. And we can tell that by major trends in the crime statistics. So burglaries are up about 25% year on year for the last 4 weeks. Not surprising. A lot of businesses are shuttered. There's nobody there. So they're easy targets for a burglary. But rape is down by about 25%. Burglary is a crime you can commit and maintain a 6-foot distance from other people. You can't socially isolate and rape. So criminals have shifted their behavior from one to the other.
Frightening, David Goldman. Let me ask you about what's happening as a result of the coronavirus down island on Wall Street at the moment. We're obviously very mindful that the market has largely declined dramatically. What's going on there? What are the prospects for a turnaround? I've been quite concerned about one of the most important figures in the financial community, Larry Fink and BlackRock, in terms of what they've been doing to the street on the so-called environment, social justice, and governance front, as well as investing in China. But I know you're on to another topic that's a very great import as well. Tell us about it.
Well, we saw an increase of initial unemployment claims this morning of 6.64 million, largest in history, in the week just ended. That's about twice what people expected. And with the economy shut down, the problem is not just that people are losing their jobs, it's that so many small businesses who employ the vast majority of Americans can't pay rent, can't pay trade payables, can't pay the light bill, can't pay their bank loans, that even if you give them relief and you say, okay, we're not going to put you into bankruptcy if you can't pay us for a few months, sorting out the mess of all of these obligations and reestablishing credit lines, reestablishing trade agreements is going to take a very long time because the fabric of business relationships has been destabilized in a way that's really never happened, not since the banks, not since the early 1930s when you had mass bank failure. It's in that sense, it's more like that kind of shock. In a nation of lawyers, the number of lawsuits is prospectively infinite. So no one knows how this thing is going to sort out, but I think what Wall Street has concluded, and you see that in stock prices, is that this is not going to be a quick snapback no matter what happens. It'll take quite a long time for the fabric of economic life to repair itself.
Especially the longer it goes on. That's obvious. Tell us about this phenomenon in European pharmaceuticals and China at the moment, David Goldman. You're a trend watcher of the first order. This seems to be a big trend.
Frank, I've been following China's attempt to position itself as the world's top provider of digital technology in the medical space. China has no privacy laws, so they can digitize everyone's health records, sequence everyone's DNA, get them to put their vital signs into a smartphone app and upload them into the cloud daily. So over the last 2 or 3 years, all the big European pharma companies have signed joint ventures. Now, after China convinced the world that it used its information technology, its surveillance capacity, its smartphone apps, a smartphone attachment that read the body temperature of hundreds of millions of people in real time, it used that to control the epidemic. Every major European pharmaceutical company has been sending people to China, signing up joint ventures to get in on this because they think this is the next new thing. This is the future of healthcare. And since healthcare is the world's biggest industry, this could be the single biggest economic trend of the 21st century. Boehringer Ingelheim, which is one of the most important German medical firms, just announced the creation of a digital laboratory in Shanghai. March 30th, they sent people there in the middle of the epidemic. They didn't care. The money was there. So off they went. America's doing the same thing. And this has been long in preparation. Huawei has been one of the spearhead companies, also Tencent, also Alibaba. I have a book coming out June 30th called You Will Be Assimilated, which contains an interview with Huawei's chief technology officer explaining how they plan to do it.
This is a much-awaited volume. We are looking forward to having a chance to visit with you at great length about it, David Goldman. In the meantime, thanks for the heads-up on this. It sounds as though it's a very ominous development indeed, to the extent that the communists have been making the case that communism is a cure for the coronavirus. This kind of data mining and abuse is almost certainly going to be an affliction for a lot of us in the future. David, speaking of afflictions, we have been witnessing our energy sector very badly affected by, I'm quite certain, a deliberate effort on the part of the Russians and the Saudis to drive down the price of oil for that reason. There seems to be some hope now that this might be at an end, this so-called price war, or at least abating. Tell us what you know about it at the moment and the impact it may have for staving off many companies following Whiting Oil in North Dakota into Chapter 11, which has just happened.
All we have is a tweet by President Trump saying that he spoke with Crown Prince MBS in Saudi Arabia, and that between MBS and Russian President Putin, there is an agreement to substantially cut oil production. He mentioned a figure of 10 to 15 million barrels. I presume that's barrels a day. Oil prices shot up $5 a barrel from the last couple of days, $3 today, to about $25. They have been below 20 briefly. That's a very hopeful sign. China has also announced that it's buying a great deal of oil to build up its own petroleum reserve. They're good bottom feeders in the market. So there is hope that if you can get a Russian-Saudi deal with the United States knocking their heads together, that oil prices will recover and save our energy sector. So Trump did say he would get involved in that. He appears to have a degree of success. There's been no further comment from the White House, but I'm hopeful that President Trump will pull the chestnuts out of the fire for us.
Well, we're speaking about this at a moment when we have tweets, but not further confirmation or elaboration. By the time this show airs, probably both will be in hand, and we will look forward to broadcasting about those tomorrow. But in the meantime, David Goldman, this is another huge mega trend of the contest between the United States energy sector and the Russians and the Saudis. I hope it is going to resolve itself in a way that enables us to continue to produce and supply the world with, among other things, cheap natural gas. And I think we're in a position to do a lot of that, but we have to have a fracking industry that survives. We'll be following it closely, as will you, David Goldman. We have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you so much for your time today, as well as the great work you do at Asia Times and on the street and elsewhere. Keep up that good work and come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.